744, 16 till 8. Nice day today. Highs of 79. One of those days of low humidity and clear skies and moderate temperatures. Now that we approach April, the end of April and beginning of May, that aren't going to be around till October, so get out and enjoy it if you can. Right now, if you average the temperatures throughout the area, we're hanging at about 57, 58 degrees. And Ryan Bourne joins us, the R. Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics at the Cato Institute, also the author of a recent book, Economics in One Virus. Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
Great to be with you, Tommy.
Tell me about the book. That intrigues me.
Yeah, well, as your listeners know, we had an unprecedented period where after the pandemic hit in March 2020, and most of my writing is based around trying to educate the general public in basic economic ideas. So I thought I'd use the hook of the spread of COVID-19 to just highlight many, important economic principles and concepts. So that book was out a couple of years ago now, but it's still available from all the good bookstores.
It sounds like an interesting read. I was saying earlier before you came Ryan, that we talk about debt and deficit, and I think some people believe that it's crying wolf and that here we go, same old thing about debt and deficit. But I think it's more like in the pre-electronic days where it's like, hey, I just came in from offshore and there's a hell of a hurricane out there getting ready to come in and flatten everything. I don't know if you're ignoring that or not, but it is out there and it is headed. So I know maybe other people have come in and told you this before, but it is on the way. Is that more where we are, really?
In the long term, everybody knows that the current debt projections for the United States are unsustainable, right?
Yeah, but they don't do anything about it, Ryan.
Well, that's true. And so every year that we don't do something about it, every year we run these unprecedented deficits. Last year's deficit was the biggest deficit relative to the size of the economy since the 1930s. Every year we don't do something about it, we get closer and closer to the precipice. Now, what that exact final crisis looks like, nobody quite knows. If I knew that, I'd be much richer than I am. But what we do know is that in the long run, the path that we're on leads to a few eventualities, none of which are good, right? It either leads to explicit default on some aspects of the debt, repudiating our promises that we made to people who own U.S. debt. It leads to very, very high inflation, or it leads to, deep, deep austerity, where you have a crisis and all of a sudden you have to slash government spending and raise taxes at the same time to try and close off for the fact that you can't borrow anymore. So, it's not just us libertarians saying this now. Penn Wharton business model that models the economy, they reckon that we've only got two decades to stabilize the size of the debt, after which it's inevitable that we face some sort of default or very high inflation where the Federal Reserve effectively funds the government. So this is becoming more and more of an issue. And I think people are realizing it's more of an issue now because government borrowing costs have gone up as a result of interest rates rising.
Before you came on, I read this from your policy analysis. I'm going to read it again. Analysts widely agree that continuing current policies without significant adjustments in tax revenues or spending cuts is unsustainable. Indeed, those who try to model the U.S. economy's growth prospects are usually forced to just assume, and we all know what happens when you do that, that politicians will deliver substantive deficit reduction in the medium term to avoid this scenario, or else their models simply crash. There is no doubt that this is unsustainable, is there?
No, I mean, it definitely is unsustainable. And again, you don't have to take my word for it. This was something that the current Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, part of Joe Biden's team, was saying in 2020, just before she became Treasury Secretary. So this has been known for some time. A lot of the problem, of course, is caused by promises to pay Social Security benefits and for Medicare payments in light of an aging population. But, on top of that, we've kind of, the last couple of decades, each time a crisis has hit, we've borrowed vast amounts, spent vast amounts in stimulus and seen tax revenues temporarily decline as a result of crises, the Great Recession coming out of the financial crisis, and then, of course, COVID-19, the COVID-19 pandemic. And so we're kind of jumping in the level of debt each time a crisis hits relative to the size of the economy. But we've got this huge headwind coming down the path. So it's like we're headed towards an iceberg. And the longer we leave it before we start turning the ship, the more likely we'll have to have a catastrophic crash.
Given what's happened politically, can we even trust the CBO's numbers?
Well, no, actually, that's a good point. So the CBO kind of has to model what they expect to happen on legislative policies. But legislative policies aren't often a good reflection of what we might expect to happen. So, for example, over the next 10 years, the CBO says that the annual deficit, that's the amount we're borrowing each year, will increase to about $2.6 trillion per year by 2034. Right? So that sounds a hell of a lot of money already. But that assumes that all the tax cuts that were passed in Donald Trump's tax package are allowed to expire. It assumes any new president and new Congress won't increase spending or introduce new government programs. And it assumes that in that period, we won't face any sort of recession or shock. And we seem to have a lot of those, we have had a lot of those in recent years. So even those assumptions about the future are incredibly, incredibly sanguine and incredibly optimistic about the likely path of debt.
You know, whenever you talk about fixing, and we'll pick this up on the other side of the break, whether it's household finances or businesses, everybody starts staying in their silos, right? Or they default to their political beliefs about, well, we got to cut this and we got to cut that and we got to cut the other thing. But that's not necessarily where the real problems are. So we'll talk about what substantive reform would look like when we come back with Ryan Bourne, our Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics at the Cato Institute, talking about debt and deficit, 751. If you have any questions, 504-260-1870. I'll pass them along. Traffic now, WWL.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
/7:57, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A couple of minutes left with Ryan Bourne, the R. Evan Scharf Chair for the Public Understanding of Economics at the Cato Institute. And we're talking about debt and deficit. And I mentioned before the break, Ryan, that everybody, you know, just like when you're dividing up a family budget or a business budget, everybody gets to their area and protects their turf, and or conversely points to somebody else and says, there's where you need to cut. What would substantive reform look like, and what really are the big ticket items that need to be addressed?
Well, if you really wanted to get a grip on this properly and diffuse the whole problem, then I'm afraid that you can't really get around touching old age entitlements, by which I mean Social Security and Medicare. So that means changing eligibility. It means, growing benefits more slowly. It doesn't have to mean taking cuts from people who are existing beneficiaries of this program right now, but you have to get them solvent for the future. Now, clearly, there's little appetite in Washington to do that at the moment. Indeed, both presidential candidates, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, reject out of hand the idea that you might touch these entitlements. So if you're not going to do that, then you're looking at smaller ticket items almost by definition. But we do think there are a range of smaller programs that could be cut right now, and a range of different things I think that could be just devolved back to the states. Now, the states have most states have balanced budget amendments. They don't always stick to them, but they're much more constrained in what they can borrow. So to the extent that you devolve more of these programs to the states have to raise tax revenue in the medium term to fund them. So that's a way towards better budget balance than we have now. Now, if you're not even willing to do that, which seems to be the status quo in Washington, I think at the very least we should be asking of our policymakers, okay, even if you're not going to do anything right now, let us know what you'd be willing to countenance if a fiscal crisis actually hit. Because what you don't want to be doing is making policy in the heat of a deep, unexpected crisis, because we know when that occurs, from, you know, what we saw in the Great Depression, what we saw after the financial crisis, and what we saw in COVID-19, all sorts of bad things happen.
And we talk about this filtering down to people, but it does have to go through state and local governments first. They're going to have to deal with it, which means it does then go to people, right?
Yeah, no, I don't pretend that there's any easy options here. But, you know, there's a lot of things from an economic perspective that the federal government is involved with, where things would be better provided either at a local level or just delivered by families and individuals. And, you know, if you wanted to do this properly, you'd go through the whole federal budget.
Thank you, Ryan.